Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast where three guys read science fiction audiobooks and or fantasy audiobooks and or speculative fiction audiobooks. But today is a special occasion. Why is this so special, gentlemen?
We did 50 things.
We did 50 things. What 50 things have we done?
This will be our 50th podcast.
Yes.
Yeehaw.
50th episode of the podcast. We have not been secretly doing 50 other podcasts. At least Barry hasn't.
Yes.
Maybe. Are you sure? Know.
I am absolutely certain.
Have you seen my bee podcast?
It's just a buzzing sound. I mean, that doesn't count. It's a podcast for bees by bees, and you're calling it a podcast, but it's just the droning sound that they make.
Are you going to try and decide what's art next?
I've already decided.
That would be awesome. I want a streaming cam of your bees.
So, yes, this is a podcast about bees. No, today we are going to be talking about the books we have read over the past 50 episodes of this podcast. Kevin, why don't you take this away?
I guess we're breaking this up into sort of books that are new to us for the podcast, and also books that, you know, we may have picked that we liked enough that we decided to, you know, inflict it on the others. So, right.
So the categories that I have here are new favorites, concepts, love to hate, and I have some slang terms that I'm going to want to discuss that we have sort of like developed over the course of the podcast, referring to parts of books that we have read or books that we have read.
Right. So one of the favorite new books was actually one of the first ones we did, Uprooted. I wasn't really expecting one of the first books that we'd read to actually kind of, you know, withstand the next 50 books or so, but I guess it did.
Yeah, that was a really good book. I enjoyed it.
For me, I just remember being so faked out by the beginning of it. I was so convinced that this was going to be essentially 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, God.
With more magic.
You know, with magic and maybe with, you know, sort of less sex. And it was just going to be like this full-on romance about, well, does she truly love this distant and horrible man? And I was, and I had just said, okay, they'd better get it in the spaceship and attack the cyborgs or I'm pissed.
What?
Wow.
That didn't
come out the first time you mentioned this book.
I texted it to you guys.
Yeah, but okay. I'm not sure even how that, I guess that must have been when the 50 Shades of Fervor came out and people were so excited about grayness or something. And
well, I'm using 50 Shades in perhaps the wrong term. I mean, you know, using it to sort of mean like an in-depth romance with kind of, a distant and annoying guy, probably like,
okay.
Well, the beginning of the book does talk about, you know, he sort of selects one of the young girls from the village that they proffer up. Right.
Right.
So it sort of has like this little creepy vibe to it. Like, oh, you'll grow to love him after a while.
Right. And afterwards the women are ruined. And yeah, I wasn't, okay. Maybe I should, you know, say more like I was expecting more like a romance novel. I was very convinced that I was reading a romance novel.
I see. So that sort of adjusted your expectations quite a bit.
Right. And then suddenly this plot launches, which is all about, you know, kind of a Cold War and all kinds of interesting political intrigue with this ancient non-human enemy. It was the equivalent of, you know, I hope that the spaceship takes off and we do battle with the cyborgs.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, I don't remember spaceships and cyborgs in the book anywhere, but maybe I missed that appendix or something.
Yeah, I enjoyed it because it had sort of like almost a fairy, not a, quite a fairy tale flavor, but sort of a tone a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
But without being like, you know, a Disney trope or a Grimm's fairy tale.
Yeah, it was like directly, something new or at least something I wasn't familiar with. It may have been based on a folk tale or something. But
it might have been, but it wasn't something that was actually...
Well, it was a
Russian fairy tale, right? It's the sort of kind of the story of Baba Yaga, right? Or my misremembering.
That was in there, yeah. I don't know how close it was to that fairy tale, but
well, Baba Yaga herself never actually shows up. She's just always lurking on the sidelines.
Yeah, but like she has several of her books or something. I guess maybe it was an element of it, but
Okay. Yeah, there were definitely a lot of things that about that book that I thought were going to go different places, but you know, it was
okay.
I still like it, so right. That's the point.
Barry, what was the favorite you had?
So I think my favorite from, you know, things that we reviewed for the podcast was probably A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, mm-hmm. by Becky Chambers. It was sort of like an unexpected favorite for me.
Yeah, for me too. Yeah, and I'm going to sort of group together Long Way and Closed in Common Orbit because they've got a thematic similarity, and as well as, you know, being the same series.
Yes. But yeah, as I said, it was sort of an unexpected favorite. You know, I was kind of going into it after reading the back of the book. I was like, all right, this could be okay. And then all of a sudden it just sort of, you know, takes off into this, you know, galactic road trip book. Mm-hmm. And it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. The thing that kind of got me after I had read both the books is that they're about family. And, you know, or, you know, it's about family, man. But, I mean, it seemed like, you know, Long Way is kind of like the family you choose, your friends, your lovers, that sort of thing. And then Closed in Common Orbit is a lot more about mother-daughter relationships.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about it is it's all still very entertaining, and you sort of wind up with a positive feeling at the end.
Yeah, and there's also some pretty good sci-fi elements to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Most of the ones that I particularly enjoyed, of course, we all particularly enjoyed, so I'm going to make a rather strange choice of the first half of Seven Eves.
Yeah, the first maybe, yeah, two-thirds, something like that, two-thirds, or whatever.
The first book in Seven Eves is one of the best science fiction novels that I've read. It's got this sort of great balance between personal stories and really interesting technology.
Planet-wide disasters.
It's got everything. And then they get to this exciting conclusion, and then the book starts up again. It's just like AI.
It just keeps going and going and going.
Right. Then we have a very, very long bus trip.
Yes. It's funny because after a couple of times reading it, it didn't bother me quite as much because I knew it was coming, but the first time I was like, wait, what? And then I was like, and then it was just confusing. And then it was like, okay, this is all right. But as you said, it's right. Like several hours of a bus trip. And you're like, I wish they had just let that thing go off.
Right. But we'll go back into Love to Hate. That's the sort of second section.
Yeah. But no, I mean, that was one that I mean, I like that book. And that is one of my favorites that I had liked previously, right. You know, to the thing. But yeah, definitely the first part is a higher point. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kevin, did you have any other ones that you wanted to do?
I guess Hagseed was another one of my new books. That was one of my favorite ones that we've read.
For me, the revelation there was that Margaret Atwood can be fun.
Fun,
not just, oh God, she's going to kill me, but she's so good at it, fun.
Fun in a prison,
yeah. It hurts so good.
Well, that was quite a phrase.
Yeah, I don't know. It's was almost off our, you know, our topics, but you know.
But Margaret Atwood, she's speculative fiction.
That's true, and it was speculative, and as we said, very arguably fantasy.
Mm-hmm. It does make so much more sense if you consider it sort of being written in the Sean and Maguire universe.
Yeah, those books are also on my enjoyed new books.
Okay. Barry, did you have anything else?
I think there was a couple of other books I think we all collectively enjoyed quite a bit, which was Crooked.
Yes.
And yeah. Lovecraft Country.
Absolutely.
Those both have some interesting themes to them.
I am happy to hear that last I heard Lovecraft Country is being optioned for a TV show.
Or, I believe on HBO.
Yeah, that'll be
pretty awesome. And
we interviewed that guy before.
Before he was super famous.
It's awesome. He's going to be our inroads to HBO. Soon we'll have a video podcast.
God, I don't want to see the HBO series version of my life. Okay. Now, one category that I have down is books that sort of gave us interesting concepts. So, for example, Infomocracy for me was one of the most thought-provoking books because it made me think about, well, what would be a radically different way of looking at government? Could this thing that looks like a utopia, how would this actually work? That sort of thing.
How would you hack your utopia?
How would you hack your utopia? That's a good one.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like, how can you use technology to move beyond just geography?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I definitely liked those concepts. Oh, another way to do democracy or something like it, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It was also a particularly timely book for us. We just finished reading it just as we did the election, so.
Yeah, when we were getting into the election season, I think.
No, we actually recorded it the day after, I think.
I'm not sure, but.
I am pretty sure.
Okay.
I remember Terror in the Air, but I don't remember the exact details.
Okay. Anybody else have more concepts, or shall I go through mine?
Well, Central Station was another one that, you know, there were some similar concepts, but also just it was a lot of, you know, how can technology change, you know, how you run things in a way?
Yeah, well, I didn't really think of Central Station quite as much as a book of concepts. That was, to me, more of a beautiful lyrical book.
Well, I mean, I think it's more like I got some of those concepts out of it. You know, the book itself, was kind of like a visual poetry or something mm-hmm. like that, you know, in a way. Yeah. But, you know, it had a lot of stuff about AI stuff, you know. But I think there were also things in there just about kind of, I wouldn't say utopia, but, you know, a future, how future could be with technology melded with VR and other weird things happening.
Right.
Yeah. I think there were a lot of interesting, you know, technology bits to think about and ponder about, and even some like nano or biological bits in there as well that were sort of all woven into the tone of the book.
Well,
that was also one of the books I had put down for, you know, one of our thought provoking.
Yeah. Like, you know, the whole, one of the main things about like, you can extend, you know, your life and memory to your descendants, mm-hmm. you know, essentially by copying that to, you know, your descendants, and they all can kind of like learn instead of my kids will learn from my experiences when I, you know, tell them lessons and stuff. It's like, you know, you'll just have my memories.
Oh, fair enough.
And you know, all of the descendants will have these memories. So you can kind of build on it, and it's and done and, you know, propagated in real time and so forth. So it's, you know, stuff like that is sort of interesting concept.
One of the other things I really liked about that book is it was a very, very gritty, coarse world.
Right. A lot of texture.
A lot of texture to it. But I mean, not just, you know, texture wise, but there were a lot of problems with this world. Right. But it wasn't that they were completely insurmountable, and people were using technology to get past some of these things. And, you know, I think in particular, one of the things I liked, I think, Hat, was like in probably the first third of the book, maybe even the first quarter, where they were sort of talking about the robo soldiers or something,
mm-hmm.
and how they were sort of like just begging for parts on the side of the road, and the government had basically abandoned them. So it wasn't, you know, to me, it wasn't like quite a utopia, but.
Well, right. The whole like the Church of Robotnik or whatever that is, mm-hmm. the Church of Robot.
Yeah.
And that.
Yeah. First Church of Robot, and they were all Robotniks.
And yeah, I did like that whole concept where it's like, you know, the AIs, you know, were sentient and everything, and they had their own religion of like, you know, well, when I get reborn, you know, I'm going to do this other totally different thing, you know, in the future I could, you know, have a better life. And so it's like, you know, I guess that makes sense that, you know, sentient computers could have own religion or something.
Plus they had a Church of Uri Geller.
Yep. Let's see. Barry, was it your turn?
Actually, those two books were my list of thought-provoking ones.
Okay, then last on my list is Stories of Your Life and Others by Ted Chiang. It wasn't that had, of course, that's a book of short stories, but every single one of them was one of these, oh, that's an interesting concept, that's an interesting concept. Like the language determinism from what became Arrival, Stories of Your Life.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there are plot holes in the movie, but those are all taken care of quite nicely in the story, and you could not have done the story as it was.
Yeah. I really like the short story about the angels coming to Earth and basically having some small amount of good effects and a large amount of bad effects.
I mean, I get the impression that Ted Chiang just loves to take a concept and punch it to death. Just, oh, let's see. Well, what about, what if you could tell if God's grace was being granted to somebody? And, you know, what if you were killed by a direct act of God and you went to hell, but you still loved God because that was what was granted to you in your death?
It's like more like he bashed it into my brain hole.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was, and also just people gaming the system where it's like, and if I happen to die in this thing, then usually I go to heaven, you know, as a side effect. You know, even if I did all these horrible things, you know.
Right, so they have a bunch of people driving around in Jeeps, you know, where they're about to have angel strikes.
And so, but I forget the title of it, but there was another story in there where there were just these two super intelligent people that were having a duel that was almost entirely mental and just sort of making each other think certain things that would cause certain resonances to happen in their brains. And so they're trying to come up with, and I will admit, this is the sort of concept that I've thought about. And he came up with additional twists that I had never I had never dealt with.
It's psionics.
It's not really psionics. That was the interesting thing, was they weren't using ESP to do this battle. That would be a little bit less interesting to me. Right. They were just trying to, well, if I do this, then he'll think this, you know,
right,
and that will just unlock this sort of mind virus that I've planted in his brain.
Right.
All right. So, did we have any other concepts that we wanted to move on to?
No, you can move on.
Okay. Let's see. So, So I've got love to hate, and this really is love to hate. There are plenty of books that we were just like meh on, and most of the books that we read we liked, but there are some that I just became fascinated by my hatred for them, to the point where I almost think of them, they're more powerful works of art than if I'd actually enjoyed them. But for me, of course, the top one is Colony. It's
our 70s miniseries incarnation.
It is currently my go-to book to recommend to people who I really don't like.
Hey, wait, you recommended that book to me.
Uh-huh.
So Colony was, of course, yeah, it was not only written in the 70s, it seems to be the 70s in a rather specific way.
Firmly planted in the 70s.
And yeah, I only got through it by imagining a 1970s made for TV movie starring John Davidson that, you know, just got through it by sort of making everything into that plot. And I mean, it just encapsulated everything terrible about the 1970s. And the 70s were a time that, you know, I have some fond memories of.
I was a product of the 70s.
Old. Yes. They say that science fiction is really about the time that it's been written in. And this just proves that beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there any love to hates from anybody else?
I think you sort of were the keeper of the love to hate.
Okay. So Planet of Adventure.
Yes. Nacho Ceviche was one of the first ones on my list.
That book was awesome.
It did have its awesomeness. That was the interesting part. You know, the outline of the story was sort of this neat story about, you know, a galactic adventurer who is battling on the Planet of Adventure to get yes. back home. But the craziest things were, of course, that the author was naming things after then exotic food dishes like nachos
and ceviche.
Ceviche. And, you know, at first I thought it was just coincidence, but it just kept happening.
Yes. Well, didn't we posit that, you know, I guess he was in the Navy and we were like, hey, you know, I'm in this, you know, port somewhere and here's an interesting, you know, food that I haven't had back home. Like,
right. You know, exactly. And so that just got stuck in his brain. And I mean,
Nacho's little brother burrito.
I mean, Jack Vance, I guess, you know, he has this reputation for being able to come up with these sort of fascinating, names and realistic worlds and so forth. But in this case, like, oh, what was it? Of course, then the ones that weren't food were just utterly absurd in other ways, like Dirter and the Dirter Men.
Right.
Durr.
And the Wonk.
Oh, yes. That was it.
Did they change one of the names?
They changed the Wonk to Wanek. Wanek, because someone explained to him the British colloquial term for wank. Right. And then he's like, oh, Okay, I guess in the next printing we could change that.
It was pronounced wonk, but it was actually spelled wank, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. W-A-N-K-H, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Yes. Then we also had, and you know, this is in a book that by an author I really respect and a book that I overall kind of liked, but this was done really competently, but this is The Horrible Island Cult in Consider Phlebas, which, I mean, you know, he achieved what he set out to do. He was trying to gross us all out on this scene. He succeeded. I'm not complaining about it, but it was still horrible to read because this
more finger sandwiches.
Yeah, this guy winds up in the island of the less stylish Hannibal Lecters, and the cult leader is this guy who has like these fake jaws that he puts in his mouth, and the reader did an amazing job just sort of like reading. I think he probably just stuck a finger in his mouth, so he's just like, oh, I'm a little worse, I guess, to see.
Yeah, and after a while you're like, it's realistic but disturbing, kind of
really creepy. That's what they set out to do, but it was horrible as well as horrifying.
So one of the other books that I put on this list was the first book in the Terra Ignota series, To Like the Lightning, which I then immediately tripled down by triple dog daring Steven to pick the sequel next later on. And then he did. Much to Kevin,
I was gonna Kevin's spare
hatred.
Ya.
Yeah, both those books sort of fell into the terror category.
Yeah, for me, I have really mixed feelings about it because I see what she's doing and she does it brilliantly. But on the other hand, a lot of people aren't going to like it. And, I think that the concepts in To Like the Lightning of like how different families have the Boshes and, you know, the idea of these sort of family groupings that sort of stack up into these little sub-societies. I thought that was all brilliant. There was just this one bizarre sequence where one character that we don't really know about is revealed to be another character that we don't really know about.
Yes.
And that was a low point for me.
J.E.D.D. Mason.
Ah, yes. So I guess
his friend Sniper.
Yes. So moving on, there are some slang terms that we've just gradually picked up from reading all of these books or about these books, like space vampire mode was something that Kevin used, and I was wondering. And that was referring to the fact that I particularly love Blindsight, and I do like it because there are some fascinating concepts in there. I didn't really mention it earlier because it was a favorite of mine beforehand. But one of the reasons that I like it so much is just I read it and I was just like, I'm going to go back and read it again. It was like one of the last print books that I had. And so I kept on just picking it up and reading it over and over again.
Right. Cause you were buying eBooks, but when you got bored, you're like, let me just pick up the one on top of the pile, which is this one. Right. Cause I don't buy any more books.
And so I would then just read it over and over again. And there's only two ways to go. You know, you're going to either love a book at the end of that or hate it completely.
Or it ends up in the trash.
Or all of the above.
Yes.
So you love it.
I do.
So it's sort of like a predetermined desert island book.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess you'll love whatever you have with you.
These are my favorite books because they're the only ones I have.
It's the instruction manual to my flashlight.
It's the Japanese
every
language.
Every word.
It's the Japanese language instruction manual to put together the food printer. But with horrifying results.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did we have other books that we hadn't talked about?
Well, we'd have to move on to the liked before and section, which
classics.
Yeah. So I guess I could, I'll just start. Handmaid's Tale, which I think all of us had read prior, but it had been a while.
Yeah.
And it's still terrifying and it's still good.
Well, yeah, I'm really glad we went back and read it again for me because I had only remembered sort of the political parts and I hadn't really gotten a lot of the nuance that she'd put into her writing and mm-hmm. just sort of the beauty of her writing.
Well, yeah, that book is like this crazy poetic book. Like the entire book is, it's like horror poetry in a weird way where you're just like, wow, it's so amazing to hear these horrible, disturbing things. Like, oh my, it's like, I like the words. I don't like what they describe.
Yeah. And I think another Margaret Atwood book we really liked was Oryx and Crake that we had all read before.
Yeah. Definitely. And I swear I really had not understood it the first time that I'd gone through it. So once again, you know, Margaret Atwood, I really need to go back and read a few times.
Yeah, that book was definitely, I mean, I like the setting and it was well written and not as terrifying. You know, there definitely were humor bits in this one as well.
Good job, Corknight.
Exactly.
Yeah, let's see. Well, of course, a previous favorite for me was Blindsight, which, you know, deals with all kinds of happy thoughts about how we're not really conscious and we're all going to die.
Yay. You can see why we all loved this book.
Yes.
So that's, and when I say space vampire, that's sometimes what I mean too, is the,
it's not necessarily, yes.
You really love it.
It's just like, you really love it. And then maybe that's a little creepy, but I mean, I am very interested in consciousness, and that book sort of makes you think about things that you would never think about otherwise. Like, you know, is consciousness necessarily a good thing, or could we be more effective without it? And that's why I have resolved to spend at least 8 hours for every 24-hour period not conscious.
I am an automaton.
Yay. Okay, any other previous?
Yeah, I mean,
books.
Wizard of Earthsea, for sure. I mean, that, you know, as I reviewed before, that's probably my favorite fantasy book of all time. And so, you know, still true, but, you know, I don't want to knock out liking newer books. So that, meaning that's why I think it's good to split this up into different categories. And You by Austin Grossman was the other one.
I wanted to mention another book that we actually hadn't reviewed, but we did read together, which was The Fire Sermon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of an interesting take on the, you know, connected twin trope.
Right.
And I think, I mean, I know for a fact that I enjoyed it I know that I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Well, stay tuned for our upcoming review of that book.
Redux. Yes.
Yes. Oh, so in other slang terms that I'd left out, there was how big are the cats? That's generally our term for some minor inconsistency that just drove us nuts for the rest of the book.
Or the
you're crushing my fur.
You're crushing my fur. And J.E.D.D. Mason, the problem there was that when you just read that in print, then I believe that, you know, most people would just sound that out as Jed, but because of the way that it was written.
It's all caps and initials. So.
And this was narrated properly.
And since this was narrated properly, we heard J.E.D.D. Mason over and over again. And right. Since this character was mentioned 1,000 times and only appears a few times, it was just driving us all a little insane.
Yes, especially when there was like, well, did J.E.D.D. Mason do this? Yes, J.D.D. Mason did that. Well, J.D.D. Mason, it was like, ah.
That's leading to a culmination where we all sang J.E.D.D. Mason to several various themes. Yes.
J.E.D.D. Mason.
We don't need a redux.
Yes.
Anything else?
Can't wait for our next 50.
Yay.
Yay. We might do this every 25 too.
Yeah, we could do that. I'm in a way, I'm like, wow, I can't believe we made it to 50 and that we actually did 50 in about a year. So we actually have consistently, you know, worn Steven down by, you know, hey, Steve, could you produce another one? Notice how I don't say at all. That's because Steve cuts out a lot of ums.
Is he going to cut out that Or what about that
it's
one?
Meta.
It's a quoted He can't.
Yeah. We might be hearing some more natural speech in the future because, you know, it might be nice to be able to, like, do something else at some time.
This is going to be sci-fi, raw and uncut.
Yeah.
Yes. To be blunt, the production value is actually much higher than a lot of other podcasts I've listened to.
Yes.
It's their style.
Yes. Because most people do just put, you know, I recorded stuff and I put it out.
And yeah, there is some production work that goes into this. And yet we still sound like the thing you're hearing in the end. Because there are limits, ladies and gentlemen.
It's class.
Something about putting lipstick on a pig.
Squeak.
I mean, I just haven't had time to do it recently with all this production.
Yep.
Eat everything but the squeal.
I will say, the first thing I thought when I was looking at this list was, oh God, I don't even remember what like a third of these books were about, just looking at the titles. Which is a little bit scary. I think it's born based on my mental age or something, or whatever.
Sounds good. All right. Well, then, until the next 50 or 25 episodes, we are
Sci-fi.
Crushing my fur.